Today's episode is proud to recognize the Alabama Nurses Foundation. Their mission? Supporting nursing scholarships and improving Alabama's nursing school facilities. You can help by choosing the Nurses Save Lives Distinctive Alabama Automobile Tag. Your purchase funds scholarships for future nurses and upgrades to teaching facilities statewide. Learn more and make a difference at www.alabamanursesfoundation.org. Together, let's invest in the nurses who save lives every day.
Welcome to Sir Thrival, the podcast about befriending grief. I'm Stacia Gaines, your host. I am doing a series on caregiver Sir Thrival. This is not my personal story, or at least not my primary story. But I kept having people say to me, I really wish you would do something for caregivers. It's really tough to care for somebody and grieve at the same time. So, fortunately, I have a lot of good friends who have that experience. Not fortunately that they have the experience, but I'm fortunate to have them as friends and be able to kind of listen to what their stories are. In this series so far, we've kind of given a foundation, a little education, talked about resources. We've talked about some of the questions you should ask if you're a caregiver. But the rest of this series is really hearing people's stories, people who have been through grief while they were giving care for someone that they love deeply. So on today's episode, we have three amazing people. First, we have Ernest Kenty. And Ernest is a pretty new friend, but he is the husband of my producer, Clarissa Kenty. So Ernest, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for the invite. Yeah. I really got excited when you asked me to. So I am looking forward to this. I've never, talked about this since the passing of my mother. So this is gonna be good. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. And then also in the studio with me, I have my dear sister, Kathy Boswell. Kathy and I have been friends for 5 or 6 years, but it was one of those instant friendships that grew rapidly. And she has experienced a lot of grief in her life, and she has taken a break from being in charge of volunteers for the police and fire games to join this morning. So, Kathy, thank you so much for taking the time and coming and being on the show.
You're welcome. It's really good to be here. I'm very excited.
And then last but not least, one of my best friends, Kim Leffler, is joining us via phone. Kim and I became friends when I lived in Maryland, and she still lives there. And so Kim is one of my friends who always speaks truth and wisdom to me. And her story of caregiving is rather unique. So, Kim, thank you for joining us this morning.
My pleasure, Stacia.
All right. Well, we're going to start off with introductions. So, Ernest, we'll go back to you and let you tell us a little bit about who you are and what your story is as it relates to caregiving.
Yes, ma'am. I am a 23-year-old retired 23-year-old. Listen, 23 years.
I don't think that's true. Only the truth on this podcast.
I could probably go for 23. Anyway, but anyway, I've spent 23 years in the federal probation dynamic of federal courts, and retired 2 years ago. Around 7 years ago, into my seventh years away from my retirement, I went to Florida, and I was able to get my mom and bring her back up here to Alabama. How that happened was I have an older daughter that was taking care of her, but she has three children, smaller children, and it just got really, really, really tough on her to do that. And she called one day and said, Dad, I don't think I can do it anymore. And I said, well, yeah, that's fine. I was waiting on this moment, really, because I don't see how you could do it. Of course, my children are her sisters and brothers are younger, but they're college age, getting ready to graduate college, so they're older. So I said it would work better. I could have, you know, more flexibility, even though I was working at that time, to go get her. So I went and got her and brought her here for the last 7 years. And it was a ride, I tell you. Never knew that caregiving was such a demand. Mm-hmm. And I would hear people say it, but of course it's one of those things where, you know, if you haven't been through it, you can hear me all day talk about what I went through as it relates to the caregiver, my mom. But until you go through it, you'll never understand. So long story short, the last past 7 years, she was with me, did well, was diagnosed with dementia. And what was interesting, though, with my mom, I kept saying early stages of dementia. I was in like 5 years saying early stages of dementia. And I said, why am I still saying early? Well, with her, it was real interesting because she would go in and out for the fifth. Mm. We never saw a real true decline where she did not know anybody. She would always know. And then at maybe the last year, we started kind of seeing like, okay, she's not remembering a whole lot. You know, it just got to a point where I was okay. It's kind of turning now, but she did fairly well. No physical ailments. When I tell you, on no medicine, nothing.
What?
He even tried to, and she passed at 98.
Oh my goodness! No medicines.
No medicine. No high blood pressure medicine, no diabetic medicine, nothing physical, nothing. She was walking when she got here, but with assistance, with a walker. The last year and a half of her being here, she stopped being as mobile, and that was because she had a hip replacement that really just arthritis just really set in, so it would pain her. And they would say, well, give her some pain. I just did not want to give her any pain medicine. They tried to get me to give her medicine for the dementia. And I said, no, I'm not doing it. You know, so she was on nothing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Yeah.
So this year, January 12th, she took her last breath. We were all there by her side, which is just the way I wanted it. I mean, I just, it was, you know, one of those things. But I don't know. It's still surreal to me, you know, even though I have some people, she made the promise. She was 98. God, man, what you say? Yeah, I know that. However.
Still your mama.
Yeah, she's the corridor of birth for me. And that's another story because she was actually my adopted mom. Oh. A lot of people ask, she was 98. She must have had you when she was 40s. And I said, well, no, she adopted me at birth. She's actually my great aunt. So I was adopted into my family, but she's my great aunt.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so we'll get into that if you want to know a little bit more about that. But the caregiving part was really, really interesting. My job was affected. It really was. I started failing a little bit in my numbers as it relates to my, you know, responsibilities for keeping up, you know, the things that I did in my job. And fortunately, I did have support, you know, at my job. My supervisors, my chiefs, my deputy chiefs, they were all there for me and asked me, you know, what I needed. And they actually did it. They were there for me to support. Mm. So until I could get out of, you know, the rut I was in for caring for her, because I'd have to take off here and there, take her to appointments,
right.
Be there for her if she was having a bad day, you know. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the things, because I asked Clarissa, I was like, how much did Ernest do and how much did you do? She said, oh, he did the lion's share. And I just think that it's, in my experience, it is often the daughters who take care of their mom. So I really wanted to hear your perspective. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to hearing more of your story, Ernest.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, Kim, we'll go to you.
Okay. Hi, my name is Kim Leffler. I've known Stacia for over 20 years. As she said, we met here in Maryland as young moms trying to sort things out ourselves and caregiving our children. my story, Stacia said, is a bit unique, and I think it is, in that my mother, who is now looking at 89, diagnosed very unexpectedly with early onset variety of Alzheimer's about 2.5 years ago. She had previously just displaying some anxiety and depression, which we thought was kind of all tied into a move they were making after 18 years, my mom and dad in Atlanta, to independent living facility down in Jacksonville, Florida. And she was having to divest herself of so many of the things she had collected during life. And it was a traumatic experience for my mom. So we kind of chalked up these odd behaviors and whatnot, moodiness to that. Long and short, we moved through to December of 2022, and my mother gets hospitalized for a UTI. I don't know if any of you have been through caring for someone who's experiencing the symptoms of a UTI, but they can really send you off the chart. I mean, it just looks like you have lost your mind and lost all ability to care for yourself. So that's kind of where we picked up the three daughters. I have two sisters. We're all 2 years apart. And my father and my mother lived together during this UTI. Then was diagnosed part of her discharge was a neuropsych eval. Found out from that she had Alzheimer's disease, late onset of this particular variety. So we managed her care for 7 months while living with my dad. We would each take turns actually living on the pull-out sofa in my mom and dad's two-bedroom apartment, managing my mother's very erratic and very disturbing behaviors. She was very typically symptomatic, as you would read about Alzheimer's, paranoid. She wouldn't leave the house. She was totally unreasonable. The microwave was going to explode. My dad was hiding liquor under the bed and drinking all day. I mean, just very accusatory and very unlike herself. So when you say the challenges of caregiving, this initial challenge was in mitigating really blow-ups between my mom and my dad. The tension was so just palatable, I mean, dysfunctional for all of us. So that was the first part of our caregiving, was understanding that only one of these two people were going to come out of here alive. And that's when we started looking at options. So my dad was already ready to be on to plan two with my mom. So my three sisters and I have been dividing, as Stacia said earlier, the time in caring for my mom. I'm usually on for a month or so. I travel here from Maryland. I've gone from different living arrangements, which we might have time to talk about later and why. But we each take a month and plug in to my mom's care. She is in full-time care, and a lot of people think this makes no sense. Why is your father paying for this level of care at a very good facility, and yet one of you three girls are there every day, twice a day, playing cards with my mom, playing Rummy Cube, exercising with her, engaging with her, meeting her where she is. And my father has been there faithfully. She'll be there at the facility for 2 years now into July. Every night they play bingo together. They do prayers. They dance. He cuddles. It's just been the sweetest team in caring for my mom. And I can't tell you how many people are there with no visitors or very few visitors. Mm-hmm. And here's my mom just, you know, showered with visitors every day. And Stacia knows my mom was the most vibrant, fun, always up for anything person. Mm-hmm. We were on a cruise down the Dalmatian coast of Croatia just the year before this happened, and she was the life of the party. Mm-hmm. So my loss has been just, and I'll get emotional, but you know, that mom, that person, that's what's gone.
Yeah.
And that's been hard to let go of.
Yeah. Thanks, Kim.
Thanks.
All right, Kathy.
Yeah. So, I guess it's really interesting about talking about being a caregiver, because my caregiving experience really started several years ago, probably in 2009. And that's when my husband was diagnosed with cancer, and just went through a series of health issues with that and trying to maintain the normalcy of life. He was still able to work, and through all of this since then, you know, he's been able to work, but it has included a lot of extreme treatments at times, and just having to balance life and taking care of him. And then in 2024, his mother got really sick, and pretty much in November, I think my husband had a transplant in October, and pretty much there were a lot of challenges with that. And during that time, his mom got sick to the point that we had to step in and begin to be a caregiver for her and began to live and support her, live with her some, and support her. And she eventually died February 27th. And his dad had been taking care of her more than we realized for like probably about a year, maybe even 2 years. But we didn't recognize the extent of it. And then so effective, and when she died in February of this year of 2025, we began to now take care of his dad, who is very much mobile, very independent. But we live with him 7 days a week. My husband stays with him 3. I stay with him 4 days a week. And really in that process of staying with him, it's really been a beautiful experience to first see my husband, who still is dealing with his own health challenges, and being so willing to step in and take care of his dad. And for me, I enjoy it because it is really a chance to, because of some grief that I deal with, there are times when you're grieving, some of the best ways to move through your own grief is to really support and help other people. Mm-hmm. And so it has been a healing balm for me to be able to be there for his dad. And I think what I realize more than anything is in caregiving, is really understanding what support the person you're caring for really needs, because it could be physical, it could be emotional, it could be spiritual. And sometimes it's simply just presence. It's right. About the atmosphere. So I've just found that through this process of caring for people, it's not so much as the, sometimes it's not like the caregiving, it's really about a loving presence, and being able to hold on to the normalcy, and finding a way to see this change in the people you love, to find a way to keep what's been lost alive.
Mm. Oh, thank you.
That's good.
I think you've kind of mentioned this in your introduction, but for you, what is the most difficult part of being a caregiver? Kim, you want to start?
Sure. I think that the most difficult part for me being a caregiver is giving care to myself. The balance that's involved in that dance of caregiving. Again, I've been very fortunate that it hasn't been mine alone to do, that I have had two sisters equally involved in this process as well as a father. So that already took a lot of the solo responsibility away from me. But when I was there in Florida, away from my home, initially, I was living with my dad, then rented a unit in his independent living facility, and then began to recognize that I was not a really, I wasn't my best caregiving self when I wasn't giving care to myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I have now found that the best way for me to be fully present and with the right positivity and energy is to rent a place that I find visually appealing, that is a place I can recharge. So I rent a cute little Airbnb while I'm down there, and I just go in to the facility, care for my mother, have lunch with my father every day, go back and care for my mother, and by 5:30, I'm done. So I have time for myself. I have time to recharge. I have time every day with my father and two sessions with my mother. So for me, that was the biggest challenge, is I tend to get very monofocused when something's in front of me, and realizing that this is a situation that I could not fix. And as a caregiver, if I couldn't give care to myself, it was not going to be a very effective and positive caregiver. Mm-hmm. So that would be my answer to that question.
Great. Ernest, how about you? You mentioned that it was really hard to juggle your job mm-hmm. and care for your mom. What else?
Well, I even being a man, I think being the head of a household makes it really, really difficult because everything is hinged upon me. Mm-hmm. And I hold that weight very dearly, and I take pride in it. And when I have to make sure everything and everybody else is good on top of my mom and her needs, that was the hardest. I had to really shift. I can remember shifting in my mind, okay, this is how, like, I know the next 7 to 8 years is going to be in my life. So I didn't have a life per se. Mm-hmm. I could have gotten somebody to come and to sit with her. And I did from time to time, but it was very minimal. Mm-hmm. But I could have done that, you know, more and more and got out and did what I needed to do. But I just did not. I bogged down in it, and it became an excuse, really did. Ah. Like, yeah, it became an excuse. Mm-hmm. People would ask me to do something. No, gotta go get my mom. Gotta go back to mm-hmm. my, you know, be my mom. And sometimes it was a good excuse. Yeah. No, I can't because I gotta go take care of my mom. But yeah, so those moments when I, you know, I didn't realize it until after the fact, you know, like, wow. Okay, what do I do now? Oh. Because she had been a part of my everyday routine for so many mm-hmm. years. And I can remember one of the first times it hit me, it was like a week or two after she had passed and we had had the funeral. So I was back at home now, you know, okay, the time to go. Well, okay, what? And I find myself, I was getting something, and I think at Lowe's or something. I was like, okay, I got to get back to mom. That thought was like, I said, well, I don't have to go home. What am I doing?
What is my purpose now?
Exactly. Yeah. That mm-hmm. was really tough. Like, okay, what am I doing? This is just, it had become my identity. And I just, you know, and again, it's, I'm not saying it was a good thing, but it was what I had to do, at least what I thought I had to do at the time. And I'm fine with it. No remorse.
Okay, I was going to ask, do you have any regret about that?
Not at all. Okay. Not at all. I just know speaking to, like, people that may be going through it now, you know, that would be something to really, really kind of watch. Mm-hmm. And I think Kim hit on it, you know, realizing that, okay, man, this isn't me. I need to take care of me just a little bit more and do some things that because, you know, mm-hmm. life is going to go on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think I've said to Kathy, and maybe Kim too, but it reminds me of when you're flying on an airplane and they tell you to put your own oxygen mask on before you put them on mm-hmm. an infant. Because if you don't, you're going to pass out. Mm-hmm. So you do have to care for yourself. Kathy, what would you say has been the most difficult part?
I think Kim and Ernest really hit on it. I would say about, it's three particular things, I think, that besides the self-care, it definitely is the atmosphere. Not being in your own space mm-hmm. and having to move back and forth between spaces, you sort of realize the things that really add to your energy level. Like, I love light, and so their home is different, so I don't have as many windows. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So just really realizing I'm understanding more about me and my own needs, about mm-hmm. my own self-care, being in someone else's space. So that's been a real awakening to allow me to really appreciate my own home even all the more. But one of the other biggest things that I think that I'm really finding or have found challenging is, and that is the mental space. Because the space mentally that you'd have to think of yourself or those things that are your dreams and your values, that space mentally now is occupied by the care that you need to give to the person that you're mm-hmm. giving care for. So the mental capacity is really something that's filled a lot, that you really have to take time to realize that it's there, because the mental capacity can cause you to begin to be very different towards people and that you interact with through what who you work with and even with your spouse and your children. So being heavily aware about mentally where I am, mm-hmm. because now there's an increase in to-dos and activities that before I didn't have. And that's really been something that I've been challenged mm-hmm. about, is mentally the space that I don't have anymore.
Mm. Yeah.
What have you, I think you've all touched on this, but is there anything else that you have learned through this caregiving process? Kathy, you talked about learning about yourself and your needs, and Kim, you talked about the need to take care of yourself so that you did have something to give. Anything else you've kind of learned about yourself through, you know, Ernest, I don't know if this is true, but were there physical things you had to do for your mom that maybe you were like, I never thought I would be doing this, you know, like changing an adult diaper or absolutely. Taking care of somebody physically?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and then again, by being a man, there are certain things that mm-hmm. Clarissa would tell me, Ernest, no, you have to do this way. And that I'm like, well, I just took it off of her and wiped it up. And she said, oh, no, you gotta do it a certain kind of way. And I was like, well, I don't know. And so she would show me, mm-hmm. you know, how to do it. And, you know, so definitely those things that I wasn't aware of and learned about me. And one other thing is, you know, what I thought was patience isn't real patience.
Really? Say more about that.
Oh my God. It isn't, man. I tell you, when you even think about how God mentions patience is one of the dear commandments he gives us, mm-hmm. you know, patience. And, you know, you kind of like, yeah, okay, well, patience on a certain level is what it is. You know, you kind of tolerate something. But it's deeper than that. You know, it's like when five people are pulling on you at one time and you got to balance it out to a place where, you know, you got to prioritize it. Okay, that person is first because that's a need. This person comes second, third, fourth, fifth. And you have to maintain your sense of sanity mm-hmm. and patience mm-hmm. all together and kind of just stay in this place where nobody knows anything is wrong. It's just you just handling it. And that patience is the kind of patience is like, I didn't have that space to pull from. So I didn't know what that was. And that's why I'm explaining it this way, because I didn't know. I thought I did have patience. That's all I've dealt with. That's what I was taught as a child growing up. Have patience, Ernest. Hey, I can remember my mom. And so that's what I prided myself on. But nah.
Okay, you just said something I think is very interesting. It seems to me, and tell me if I heard this right, you felt the need to show that you were okay to the outside world. It felt like you felt that burden of making sure everybody knew you were okay, you could handle it.
Absolutely. Because certain people that you're around will tell you, hey, you're acting a little different. What's wrong? Mm. And then if you tell them you're spent because of XYZ, again, like I said, first, mm-hmm. they wouldn't understand it. They were like, why are you acting like that? For instance, my job, you know, they don't care per se, like what you got going on at home, you know. And I get it. You know, sometimes your supervisor, they all say, hey, we're concerned about what's going on. But they're not looking at it like that. You still got a job to do. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I mean. Like you have to, you just got finished staying up all night. okay, now you know you have an appointment early in the morning, 8:30. This guy's just getting out of jail. You have to touch base with him. You have to make sure all his conditions are read. You have to, all of this stuff that your job, I can't. Yeah. You know, I go in and when I'm drained and I miss a condition and this guy goes out and reoffends and I say, oh yeah, I forgot about that, but I was just so tired that night. I was with my mom. But what? No, it didn't work like that. Life didn't work like that.
Yeah.
And so with certain issues, certain things that people would, you know, kind of pull from me, I had to make sure that I'm taking care of myself in that mental space that you're talking about and just really kind of honing in on it.
Yeah.
Because it taught me a lot. It did about self.
Yeah.
You know, how patient are you? Oh, yeah. You
you know, and I think one thing we haven't hit on, and I think it's really important is, and that is when the person you're caring for is an extension of the person you love. Mm-hmm. So I think just like with Ernest, his mom moved in, and Clarissa, it's not Clarissa's mom. It was Ernest's mom.
Right.
Just like with me, with Dad, it's my husband's dad. Mm. And so there's a dynamic that's there that I think we also have to really recognize that the love you have for your mates is often, you become a caregiver as the result of someone else's parent or someone else's situation, the extension of the person you love. So it's really important to be prepared in your marriage or in a relationship where that may happen, that you all have that understanding that the other is willing to come alongside of you and care for that person. And sometimes when you talk about culture, I think that that may be part of it.
Yeah.
Is that that is not one of those conditions of that relationship or that love to say, hey, if something happens, I want my mom to come live with us. And as that spouse, you say, hey, that's fine. I'm with you. Whatever happens.
Yeah.
So it's just really important to really realize that when you become that caregiver as a result of it, may not be your mom or dad, but it is.
And Kim actually cared. You cared for your mother and your father, your mother-in-law and father-in-law.
So it was my mother-in-law was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Oh, goodness. We lost her about 10 years ago. And in that, as she moved into a care facility, my father-in-law moved in with us, my husband and myself. We set him up in a, put him in the basement, essentially, but we made it look nice. But he lived with us for 7 years through COVID. We had a multi-generational family. All the kids came back. I mean, it was so dear to have him here with us, especially when he did lose his wife. And he wasn't alone. You know, he had all of us. So my husband watched me care, and his father passed away right here with me alone in this house. But that was the backdrop, really, for me caring for my mother.
Yeah.
That taught me so much, and it really prepared my husband for being very open to my being back and forth in getting back to Florida to help with my mother, because we had poured ourselves into the care of his dad as a part of our family for those 7 years. So yeah, a really unique preparation in so many ways for both myself and my husband in going into this caregiving for my mom.
And I think, Stacia, just one last thing about that is, I think what it really says from the three people that are sitting here is, we've loved their parents as if they were ours.
Absolutely.
And so that's what I think I see the thread in all three of us is that, you know, yes, they may have been our spouse's parents, but at the same time, we love them like they were our own. And that's pretty special, because that's not a relationship that everyone truly is able to say they have with those, their in-laws. So I just think it's pretty special. It's a God-given gift to be able to have been given two sets of parents that literally you're like, they're both my mom, they're both my dads, I love them, and I want to be there.
So. Yeah, that's why I wanted you on here, Kathy, because I've been in awe of that. I really have. And I've been in awe of Kim, you know, taking time away from her family in Maryland and going and spending an extended time. So I think to wrap this up, I would say that caregiving is a sacrifice. It is a sacrifice of love. Absolutely. And I think we have three very fine examples of people who have given sacrificially to either their own parents or their spouse's parents or to their you know. So I just thank you all for telling your story and for sharing. And I know that I've been inspired by your words. And listeners, I hope that you gain something from their stories. And just know that if you're going through grief as a caregiver, you are not alone. Remember, there are a lot of resources out there for you. And you just need to ask the questions. You need to reach out for help because it can be a lonely thing. And if you're in a marriage, you may, like Kathy said, talk to your spouse and make sure that you're in communication because it is a very draining thing. All right. Well, thank you, Ernest, Kathy, and Kim. And we will talk to you next time with a whole new panel. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.